Thank you. Maybe. Maybe I could do it. Okay, so what happens is we're going through this process and there hasn't been anything that has taught us, and now you're expected to go do that. And as you're expected to go do that, we want you to do it really, really quick. Because some of you have been widowed and, you know, or have been a widower now for 3 months, and why aren't you better? I'm sure you've had people ask you that. When are you going to move on? I'm sure you've had people ask you that. You know, if somebody hasn't lost their spouse, guess what? They don't know. They don't know what it's like. If they've never grieved, guess what? They never know. And even though they may have lost children or lost moms or dads, most of them at least grandpas and grandmas, it is not the same. The hardest thing to grieve, brothers and sisters, is the life of a spouse. Okay, we know that. Okay, the next part is even harder for you to understand. The next part says it's a feeling process, not a thinking process. Guess what you guys want to do? You want to think it through. You want it to make sense. And I'm here to tell you there isn't anything about it that makes sense. I'm sure there's been people that have said to you, oh, your husband or your wife must have been needed in the other world, that they were taken home so young. How mad did that make you feel? It should have. Those stupid people.
Just get over it.
Yeah, you know what? You needed them. Your children needed them. It doesn't make sense why Heavenly Father would do that, okay? Now, what we do know in the Scriptures is that the day will come, okay, that He will sit with you and He will explain to you all of the reasons why He did what He did. That may not give you any comfort, but I want you to know the day will come that He will explain why He did what He did. That's a promise. Now, to help you through it, that's what we're all about here today, right? Okay, on your backside. Nope, it's front side. Nope, backside. I don't know what side. It's this side. Okay, let's share with you what happens. Ooh, that's not working. If I tip that over, don't tell Ann, okay? No, we're okay. Now, here's where we go. Realize that when your spouse passed away, it caused you a tremendous amount of trauma. Did I just write on me? Did I write? No. I could have. Okay, is there anybody here that it didn't cause you trauma? Nope. If you look around, guess what everybody's looking like? It caused us trauma. When you have trauma, either you resolve the trauma or it creates a tremendous amount of stress. Now, my secretary created that, and I have very, very bad handwriting, and I think she thought I meant shock. It does cause you to go into shock, but the reality is it causes what? Is there anybody here that did not experience stress when you lost your spouse? How many a tremendous amount of stress when you lost your spouse? And it does. When that happens to you, it makes your minds go numb. Any of you had numb minds? Okay, short-term memory loss. Anybody here have short-term memory loss? Okay, literally what happens, it is not your age. Okay, you have a chemical inside your brain called dopamine. Dopamine is the chemical that lets you have pleasurable experiences. For Trent Allen, when he jumps off a cliff, he has lots of dopamine because he's doing what? He's doing something exciting. Okay, but information comes in to your brain. Dopamine has two more important things that it does. I think it's even more important than have pleasurable experiences. It's the chemical that takes your memory and puts it inside your long-term memory. Okay, and it's also the chemical that goes in and retrieves it and brings it back to short-term memory so you can use it. Okay, when you have go numb, okay, it's literally because stress is the number one killer of the dopamine, that chemical in your brain. Heavenly Father did that for you for a reason. Because what the experts tell us is that when we're in this state right here, if we had a place in our brain like we do for everything else, that it would literally kill you.
They say that the trauma of being born alone would kill you. And so nobody would be alive. And so what happens is it takes the memories and it scatters them throughout your brain. Okay? Now that's a good thing and a bad thing. Because when your mind is in this state, it also goes in, and because of the memories that you have senses. Remember what they are? Touch, taste, sight, sound, smell. And it creates what we as therapists call triggers. Triggers are emotional memories that come because of your senses. So you're driving down the road, okay? And as you're driving down the road, a song comes on that was you and your spouse's favorite song, and there's a trigger, bam. Now what does it do to you? It calls crap, is that what you said?
Cry.
Oh, cry, I thought you said crap. Whoa, and I thought, well, it's crappy. And it produces anxiety. Oops, not anger. Okay, it produces anxiety. That's what it does. Makes your heart race. Sometimes it takes your breath away. Okay, it makes your mind race. Sometimes it hits so hard it makes my stomach churn. And as I have that anxiety, I go into fight, flight, and for most, freeze. Okay, fight comes out as anger. Flight says, I want to run away. And freeze says, I'm going to go zone out. That's what it does. Okay? How many of you here have gone through your first Christmas? Okay, when you went through your first Christmas, how was it? One more time. It was awful. How many of you just wanted to not be there?
Leading up to 20 was worse.
Mm-hmm.
The actual day itself was actually quite peaceful. It was all the lead up and all the stuff getting prepared for it. Maybe I'm just odd.
No, you're not odd at all. Because you see, when you're in this state, you misread life's cues. In other words, in the previous Christmases, before you lost your spouse, yeah, Christmas is always hectic and always horrible and all those kinds of things, but it wasn't terrible. We did it. We went out and we did the shopping. We did the wrapping. We did the decorating. We did the cooking. We did all of the things to all of the neighbors, and it was okay, and it was kind of fun. But this year, because I had to do all that stuff, because what's going on? It's not the same. I misread the cue, and it's not fun anymore. And what it does is it then recreates more what? Which then creates more what? And it goes round and around and around and around and around. And if you get caught in this cycle, if you get caught in this cycle, it's pretty dangerous stuff. That's where people get depressed. That's where people develop anxiety disorders. That's where people land themselves in hospitals. There's a lot of people that want to zone out so much they go drugs and alcohol. And we don't want you in that state, do we? Okay, so because of that, what we want you to do is we want to give you some tools now to help you learn how to grieve in a more healthy way. Is that okay that I give you some actual tools that you can grab onto? Okay, tool number one, is it goes back to this side. Okay, and I want to teach you a concept. My background, brothers and sisters, is I've been a marriage and family therapist for almost 30 years. It'll be 30 years this August. And my very first client in graduate school happened to be a little five-year-old boy who was sexually abused by his older brother. And as I came out of graduate school, I did have an interest in working with children that had been sexually abused. I'd been out of graduate school about a year and a half, and I received a phone call by one of the 70 in Salt Lake and said, would you please come down and visit with me? And I thought, oh no, what have I done wrong? Because that's a really scary kind of phone call to get. As I went down and I met with him, what he said to me is, he says, Brother Allen, we've had our eye on you for a little while, and we believe that you're somebody that we could use
And we'd wondered if you'd go back to school and be certified to treat sexual abuse of children. We don't have anybody in northern Utah that we really trust, and this is a very, very sensitive subject, and we were wondering if you'd do that. Once again, I wish the church would have paid for that, which they did not. And I went to California, and I was taught there for about 9 months. I went down there once a month for a week and stayed and came home after being certified as a sexual abuse therapist counselor. And for the next 17 years of my life, brothers and sisters, I worked between 45 and 50 hours a week treating children and teenagers that had been sexually abused. And that's how I started my practice. Now, as you might think, it's not what you call a really enjoyable job. Understand that nobody ever came to see me because they wanted to. And especially the teenagers that would come in, they would always come in with an attitude that you're a man and a man hurt me and I want to kill you. And it's one of those things that life went on. It came to a point, brothers and sisters, that I became depressed. Don't know if you can imagine that would ever happen, but yep, I became depressed. And because of pride, first of all, I didn't seek medical attention. I didn't do that because guess who referred most of my clients? The doctors. I didn't want to go to a doctor and have it spread throughout the community that he's weak and he's crumbled and he's crashed and let's not give him any more clients. I didn't do therapy because literally the state of Utah recognized what I was doing. And they hired me, and I went around the state of Utah for 3 years, and I taught therapists how to treat sexual abuse. And so I didn't want to go do that, because if I went out there and all these people that I taught how to treat sexual abuse, and look at him, he's crashed and burned. And so every day I would wake up, I'd put on my happy smile, happy face, and then I would go to work, I'd come home, I'd pull my happy face off, I'd climb into bed, I'd cover my head with my covers, and about doing that for about 3 months, my wife finally came to me and said, "Honey, you either go get this fixed or I'm going to have you committed." Now, she would never commit me, but she threatened to. Now, in my life, my mother, at an early age, and we had lots of trials and tribulations. I actually had cancer at 16 and went through all of that fun stuff. And it's never, you know, I noticed there's a few guys that don't have hair here. It's never a really good thing at 16 to have no hair. It's not a good thing as a 16-year-old to go from 165 pounds down to 109 pounds. It's never a good thing to have your Adam's apple bigger than your nose. And you go back and you look at my pictures, I was a really ugly guy. And that's why I try to keep as much hair as I can, because back then I could see my head, and I didn't have as good heads as these guys do. They were ugly. It was just ugly. But the reality is we went through tough times. My sweet little mother, though, taught me that when you go through tough times, you always go back to basics. And so as a young man, okay, or a young therapist back then, or I was actually older now, but as that therapist, I decided I had to go back to basics. Now, the basics for the Allens is this, is you fast and pray all the time. You get to the temple as often as you can. You read your scriptures and you serve as much as you can serve. So for me, that's what I started to do. Okay, as I picked up the scriptures, and I wish I'd have brought them in, I have them out in my truck, but the very first thing I read was the Book of Mormon. Now, as you guys have been going through your grieving, has any of you been reading the Book of Mormon? Have any of you discovered yet that all of the prophets in the Book of Mormon were depressed? They are. I can go into the scriptures and I can show you where every prophet in the Book of Mormon was depressed. And as I'm going through the scriptures, reading my Book of Mormon, it was making me more depressed than even what?
2 Nephi 4.
Yes. Okay, he's going to go and his pillow is wet with tears. And oh, what a wretched man I am. Father Lehi and his sweet little wife were so depressed they couldn't get out of bed. Doesn't that sound like depression? Okay, it is. And it didn't really help me a whole lot. And I'm getting a little more depressed. And then I jump into the Doctrine and Covenants. And as I'm reading through the Doctrine and Covenants, and I am not a scriptorian, but it's somewhere in the 50s, okay? It's talking about light and darkness. And there's a scripture that says that the light will chase away the darkness. And what happened to me, brothers and sisters, is I had a little mini vision. And the mini vision took me back to when I was 4 or 5 years old, and I'm in my bedroom, and it's lightning, and it's thundering, and it's dark, and I'm scared to death, and I'm screaming for my mother. My mother comes. The light in the hall is on, and she opens the door, and I sit there in that little mini vision, and guess what happened to the darkness that was in my room? I actually watched as it was swept away by the light. I thought, whoa, that was powerful. And I started to think, light, darkness, good, bad, evil. And then I landed on positive, negative. And I thought, whoa, there's a reason I'm depressed. I have more negative in life than I have positive. Now, doesn't that make sense? And in your lives right now, guess what you're thinking? You have more negatives in your life than positives. And I have to tell you, you may have. But guess what we want you to do? We want you to chase it away. So what the concept says is this, is that as you are going through what you're going through, your agency has been taken away. Your agency's been taken away. Now, what I know is that if your spouse was really, really, really sick, it may come to a point in your life that you started to pray that they didn't get well and that they'd just be called home. Okay, I had individuals in the older group, okay, that they had that they prayed that their spouse would be taken. I had another lady that prayed because her husband, okay, was mean and horrible and rotten and he threatened to kill her all the time. She just prayed that he'd be taken away so she wouldn't have to worry about that anymore, and it happened. Then she felt years of grief or guilt. Okay, but the thought says is that there's nobody here that raised your hand and said, I really want my spouse taken away from me. And as a result, because of agency, you lost yours. So far, so good? There's some of you looking at me weird. Okay, but just trust me. And if you don't believe me, follow what I ask you to do. And if it doesn't work, I'll replace and repay your money for today's class.
It's yes. Not a weird look. I always look this way.
Oh.
But I was thinking when you say about that little revelation,
mm-hmm.
Like I'm not going through a lot right now.
Mm-hmm.
I am very bad in the deepest.
Mm-hmm.
I have a neighbor who is 92 years old, and he has a revelation that he should get married. He should get married to me.
Well, there you go.
A revelation.
But tell him, I'm sorry I didn't get it. Okay.
92.
Yeah, he's not having any, he's not having revelations. I was going to say that, you beat me to it. Yeah, that's good. Okay, now back to getting your agency back. Here's the concept. Number one is the very first thing you have to do is you have to recognize when your agency is gone. You recognize when your agency is gone by tuning into your body. When your body feels bad, when it feels sad, when it feels horrible, when it's frustrated, when it's angry, when you feel betrayed, when you feel abandoned. Any of those negative emotions, brothers and sisters, guess what's gone? Because how many of you would choose to have those feelings? I don't think any of you. A young lady that I was working with a couple of years ago had been raped. When I asked her how she feels when she thinks about the things that had happened to her, she said to me, it makes me feel crappy. Okay, every time you start to feel crappy, guess what's gone? Your agency. So now you know. Then you go to step two. Step two says you choose how long you want to feel that way. Now, when you learn to actually choose how long you want to feel way, it's literally, it's now your choice. And there is so much power, brothers and sisters, by literally allowing it to be your choice. Okay? Even though I don't deal 24/7 with sexual abuse anymore, I usually try to keep it around 15, 16 individuals that I'm dealing with that. Every time these little children come into me, guess how it makes me feel? Crappy. It makes me feel bad. I know what they're headed down through. I know what they're headed down through. And I allow myself now to feel for them. What I know is that if I don't feel for them and I shut off all my feelings, okay, that I become just this shell of a person. And so I literally will allow myself to feel for them. But now it's my choice of how long I want to feel for them. What I also know is that in what I'm doing, okay, that I have to feel for them in order to be a good therapist. But I also know that if I'm as depressed as them, that they won't come back. Because would you guys come see a therapist that's more depressed than you are? No, you're not going to do that. I have to be out of the hole. What I'm saying to you now is that allow yourself to choose how long you want to feel that way. And under step two are three parts. A, the most important. A says allow yourself to feel. Guess what you should feel? You should feel bad and sad and hurt and abandoned and frustrated. Some of you anger. Some of you just plain lonely. You should feel that way. And it's okay. There is no sin in feeling. If there was a sin in feeling, God would not be God and the Savior would not be the Savior. Because guess what kind of feelings they have? All of the above. They've had them all. If not, go read your scriptures. If you don't think that God was ever angry, go back and read the Old Testament. You don't think the Savior was angry? He was the God of the Old Testament, but he was also kicked the little guys in the temple out, didn't he? Allow yourself to feel, because grieving is what kind of a feeling or a process? It's a feeling process, not a thinking process. Allow yourself to feel. As you allow yourself to feel those feelings, set the time. So the next step in step two is literally set the time, or how long do you want to be that way? And C says that the time you set has to be in real time. You can't just say, I want to feel this way for a minute. I want to feel this way for a little while. I want to feel this way for a couple of days or a couple hours. That's not real time. Real time comes in minutes and hours and days and weeks and months, decades and centuries. You guys get to choose how long you want to feel that way. And if you want to feel that way for a couple of weeks at a time, I'm perfectly fine with that. If you want to feel that way for a couple of hours today, I'm perfectly fine with that. Okay, but I want it to be your choice. Now, there you are. You're at work. You have a trigger hit. Okay, how long do you want to feel bad? Somebody give me a time.
15 minutes.
15 minutes. There we go. Now you go to step two or three. Step three says is that you cut the time in half. Okay, the reason that you cut the time in half is a concept, okay? The concept says is that we live life and we're constantly living in an emotional state. You cannot not have emotions unless you're numb. Okay, and my belief is even people who are numb have emotions. So your emotions are positive or negative. And understand that you can go down this road right here and you can have the best day ever. You can have the best hour ever. And all of a sudden a trigger happens. And guess where that trigger will take you? Just like that, all your positives are gone. Just like that, in the snap of a finger. The negative side of the spectrum, brothers and sisters, doesn't work that way. The experts who study this stuff actually say that a negative is 7 times more powerful. In other words, you have to have 7 positives to replace a negative. I don't give it that much credit, okay, just because I don't want to. And it's my plan, so it's my prerogative, right? So every moment, though, every minute you're going down this side, you cannot snap your finger and be happy. True? Have any of you ever tried that? You go to bed at night feeling crappy. How do you wake up the next morning? And so realize that every minute you're going down, it's going to take you at least that much time, if not more, to get back to neutral. So if we have 15 minutes, okay, we got 7.5 minutes coming.
We are going. We've got 7.5 minutes coming back. And there's your 15 minutes. Okay? Now, next steps, you go to step 4. Now, all of this happens very quickly. You know, we're doing this in less than a minute. Okay, the next thing you do is you set a timer. How many of you have one of these? Do you know how to use it? You what? Okay, how old are your children? Okay, my 3-year-old taught me how to use my phone. How's that? He's not mine, he's my son's. And he knew that I was setting timers. And he says, Grandpa, I can show you how to set a timer. I says, you can? And he said this. Let me see it. He grabbed my phone, set the timer for 2 minutes. Oops. It caught up what I was saying before. Set the timer for 2 minutes.
I can't set the timer for a specific time. Should I set an alarm instead?
Yes.
Setting the alarm.
For 2 minutes. There we go.
Sorry, cunt. I didn't get that.
I still haven't got it down. Adam had it down. Set the alarm for 2 minutes.
Set the alarm for when today?
2 minutes.
Setting the alarm.
There we go. Thank you. Whoever did that, thank you. Now, what I want you to do is I want you to go learn how to do that. I thought I had that down. But he learned how to do it because his mother, when he had to go into timeout, he would set the alarm. Isn't that cool? You're in trouble. Here's the phone. Go set your timer. And that's what he did. And he learned very, very quick and very, very easy. He did it better than I did. But you do. Now, the second thing that I want you to do is not only set the timer, but I want you to go into your phone and I want you to find the most obnoxious ringtone. As you find the most obnoxious ringtone, now what happens, all right, is the alarm goes off and it does 2 things. The very first thing that it does, brothers and sisters, is it stops a universal law that every one of us has to live within. The law says when an object is in motion, it will remain in motion until something of greater value stops it. Guess what your brain is? It's an object in motion. The average person thinks at 400 thoughts a minute. In the time you'll be here with me today, that's 24,000 thoughts in an hour. In a total day, that's 576,000 thoughts. And the experts who study this stuff tell us that the average person writes at 10,000. 2 minutes. Okay, that's not the most. No, because I've changed mine now. That's my favorite. Okay, what it does now is it stops your mind from moving forward. Okay, that one's my annoying one. Oops, I hit snooze. And I don't know how to take it off of snooze. It'll go off another 10, 11 minutes. Okay, but now what happens is it's doing that, and because of the annoying thing, what it's doing now to your brain is it's conditioning it when it hears that sound is to stop. It conditions your mind to stop. And what begins to happen then is that over time, what you're doing is you're limiting your time of feeling to what you can do. Because if I'm at work and I've got a 10-minute break or a 15-minute break, guess what I don't have time to do? I don't have time to break down. Okay, if you're a school teacher and you've got kids, you know, that are coming in, you don't have time to break down. If you're at work and you're about to give a big presentation, you don't have time to break down. Okay, so what it's doing is it's saying, okay, I'm still allowing myself to grieve. I'm still allowing myself to feel. I'm still allowing myself to go this. But I'm doing it in smaller blocks of time. Now, I promise you that it will not slow you down in your grieving by grieving at smaller blocks of time. It'll still help you grieve, and you'll go through the grieving process. But what you'll find is the grieving process won't be as painful. Now, let me explain as we go on to step 5. The timer goes off, and the next thing you do is you
now think a totally different, notice the words I'm using, totally different positive thoughts. In other words, what I don't want you to do is I don't want you to think about your spouse at all during the next few moments. I want it to be something totally different. Now, here's what happens. The experts who study the human mind, what they find is that for most individuals, 2 days after their trauma, after their crisis, they're not thinking any new thoughts. Realize that you guys went through the death of your spouse, you went through the funeral of your spouse, and then a couple of days after that, realize, yeah, you're going to have a few things pop up about finances and insurance and this and that. But you have these little crises, and 2 days after those, 2 days after those crises, you're not thinking any new thoughts. Guess what you're thinking? The same thoughts that you thought 2 days ago. And guess what those thoughts will produce? The same feelings that you had 2 days ago. And so you go back now, and you look back and you say, okay, am I thinking any new thoughts about the death of my spouse? And guess what I'm going to tell you? You're really not. And for those of you that have been down the road now for 3, 4, 5 months, you've probably dealt with just about everything you're going to deal with in one form or another. You will have a few new thoughts pop up, but I'm here to tell you that nope, not really. And as you think about these things next month, how's it going to make you feel? And you think about these things 6 months from now, how's it going to make you feel? It'll make you feel the same. The secret then is to go in and define things in your life. Look for things in your life that make you happy. Okay, again, I'm a big user of technology now. And the reason that I'm a big, oh, now it's making me snooze for 25 minutes more. Okay, but I'm a big user of technology for 2 reasons. Number one is that I have a granddaughter that says she won't talk to me on the phone, but she'll text me, and now she won't text me. She'll only tweet me. Guess what I've had to learn how to do? Okay, because I do want to connect with her. But the reality is I also know that this can be a very valuable tool. And inside my little phone here, I have literally 1,300 pictures. I looked at it last night. I have 97 videos of my grandchildren and my children and things that we do in the world. And every time I watch one of those little videos of my grandchildren and my children, guess what it makes me do? It makes me smile. Okay, I have a video that my daughter sent me. It's about 30 seconds long. As she, this little sweet little granddaughter who was born 2.5 months premature, she's over a year old, and she's finally learning how to talk. And one of the very first words she learned how to say was grandpa. Wow. And my daughter has her sitting in her high chair giggling, saying, grandpa. It's just precious, and it makes me smile. You can do the same thing. As you go for walks, you take pictures. As you look and you see your flowers, you see a beautiful sunset, you see a beautiful sunrise, guess what you do? And what it'll do is it'll give you positive thoughts. Now, realize that again, when you think the same thoughts that you're thinking, you'll always get what you've always gotten. A smart man, I think his name was Albert Einstein, says crazy people are people who do the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. And go back to my definition of grieving. You're trying to think through something that makes no sense. And you're trying to think it through. Guess what you're going to find? Not going to work. But as you feel your way through it, what you'll find is that you will do better. You will be happier. And as I said before, I promise you, if you go try this and you try it faithfully for over a month and it doesn't work, I will refund the money that they paid me to come speak to you today. Yes?
So how, when we think of these new thoughts, how do we keep ourselves from wanting to think of it with our spouse in that? Oh, he would love that. Oh, we used to like, you know.
Mm-hmm. How do I... You have to train your mind, literally. And now the next step. Okay, the next step says, as soon as you can, do something different. Now, the reality of it is, guys, is you got to stop your thinking. You got to start thinking positive. But the real help comes in doing something different. That's where the strength is. It's in the doing of the something different. And as you do something different, all of a sudden, now what it's doing is it's adding. Now, that takes us to the next phase. Hang on. Okay, good friend of mine, Dr. Chaplin, okay, created a thing about, he called it a reservoir theory of stress. And I'm a very fine artist, so just bear with me here. Since most of you are women, we'll put hair on her. Okay, now I know that that doesn't look like a reservoir, but guess what it is? That's a reservoir. Now, I live on a place called Eden, and I live right by a dam that's a reservoir. And the dam man lives in my ward. Okay? We used to call him the waterfall fairy, because in Ogden Canyon, where you have to drive up through to get to where I live, there's this beautiful waterfall, and it's fake. So we used to call him the waterfall fairy. He says, no, I'd rather you call me the dam man. And so he is the dam man. Now, the theory says this, okay? In Utah, because of the water situation that we have to store water. And the dam that I live by a couple of months ago was like this, okay? There were parts of the dam way over here that really had nothing at all. There were parts of the dam that were no more than just a little puddle, all right? In the spring, or in the spring before the water starts to come in, the dam man said to us, he says, I could drain the whole entire reservoir the way it is right now in less than 2 weeks without flooding the canyon. Later in the spring, where it is right now, okay, it would take him actually 2.5 to 3 months to drain the reservoir without flooding the canyon. It holds that much water. Does that make sense so far? Now, the theory then says, just a minute, because I got to figure out how to time. Stop. I hit the right button this time. Okay, the theory then says that what you have to do is you have to be able to look and see where your reservoir level is. Now, as you look at this today, I want you to grab on and do a little picture on that paper. Where is your reservoir? Are you full? Is life good like it is for me today? Am I down here? Am I somewhere in the middle? Or am I this little puddle? Now, if you'll go back to the time that you lost your spouse, guess where I can guarantee you were? You were that puddle. And anything that comes along then, because it comes along, is going to go right out to your drains. And when your drain is nothing more than a puddle, guess what you're always going to be? You're always going to be stressed, and you're always going to be on the edge. Does that make sense? Okay, so the important thing is then is to go in and be able to see where you are. The next important thing is to go over and look and say, what are my drains? Now, will you take just 30 seconds? And I want you to write down the things that stress you out. It may be money, it may be your car, maybe your children, maybe sprinklers. It may be that my kids are home alone right now. It may be that I don't know how to change a tire. It may be being alone and lonely. It may be going to bed alone at night and waking up the next morning alone. It may be grocery shopping. What stresses you out? Okay, now what I want to teach you is a concept that you need to be aware of. Realize that you look at your list and you may say, well, there's nothing there that I can take off the list. There might be things there that you can take off the list, but it's going to make you a choice. So let's pretend that some of you want to not be alone anymore, so you want to go get married. You got to understand that you're going to give up being alone right now, and you're going to go get married. And when you go get married, guess what it's going to create? Okay, I'm just here to tell you, you can't eliminate the stresses in your life. Doesn't that make you feel good? Okay, you can't eliminate the stresses that you have in life, but what you can do is you can fill up your reservoir. Now, one of the hardest things that I have to teach, and I have to do it over and over and over and over again with my patients, is that they don't believe that they can go do things after the loss of their spouse. Because what happens is your spouse passes away, and all of the things that I was doing to make myself feel better and to help me feel better was always done with my spouse. And it's really, really hard to say I can go do those things, because when I do them, they're so painful in the beginning. They are. But you have to understand that as time goes on, they'll be better. But what you need to do is you need to go into your life, and you now need to go and say, okay, I'm going to fill up my reservoir. I'm going to add fillers to my life. Now, the reservoir that I live by, okay, has many ways that it fills up. Okay, it has streams that flow into it from the snow melt. It actually has rain and snow that falls in it. Not a lot of stuff comes from that. Okay, the biggest way that this reservoir gets filled up is there's these great big artesian wells that come from the mountains above that are pushing in 55,000 gallons, and there's 13 of them, and they're each one are producing about the same, 55,000 gallons a minute. Whew. And it's there, and it's constantly coming, okay? But what you've got to do is you've got to have fillers that fill your reservoir. Okay, so what you're going to do is you're going to look down and say, where's my fillers? And now to answer the question that you ask, okay, can you give me an example? Now, here's what we're going to do. If you only had 5 minutes to do whatever you could do that would help you feel better, what would you do? Music. Do what? Hug my kids. I can do that. What else? Those are wonderful. Play with your dog. Look after it. What else?
Exercise.
Exercise. You can walk for 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Text a friend. Absolutely. What else? Mm-hmm. Keep going.
Love more Oreos.
Love Oreos. Gotta have some Oreos. What else? Mm-hmm. Now listen to what you're doing. Okay? I want you to write down the things that make you feel better. You have to write them down. And what I do want you to do is when you get these things all written down is I want you to go in your phone and I want you to go to notes, and guess what I want you to do with them? I want you to put them in your phone. Now, let's just move on. We're not going to go to the next ones. We're going to go all the way down to 1 hour. If you had an hour to do whatever you wanted to do, what would you do? Two naps. We have a read. Watch TV. So, I don't know. Most of my time, I'm going to be honest with you, I rarely get an hour, I rarely get a day, and I get a weekend probably about every 3 to 4 months. Is that terrible that I tell you that? Most of my time comes in 5, 10, 15 minutes. I have about a 20, 25 minute drive home where I use music some days. A lot of the time, though, I'm thinking about good things. Okay, I shut my radio off because I like to ponder. I like to think. I like to let my mind go. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, both of those. Excellent. Okay, in the morning when I'm driving in, I listen to the scriptures. That's how I get my scripture reading done. Okay, but you're putting things in. But if you're there and all of a sudden you've got an hour, and you're thinking, what am I going to do? I've got a whole hour before the kids come home. And now 30 minutes are gone. Now I've only got 30 minutes. What am I going to do? And oh, it's all gone. And they come home and you didn't do anything to fill you up. So what I'm asking you to do is you go in and you put these things down. Write them down. Write them down. Put them in your phone so that what you've got now is you've got things that you can do. Now, let me give you big picture so that you can see
how I use it. Not too long ago, I had a young family came in. It was actually, it's been probably about 8-9 months. Nope, can't even be that. Well, maybe. What had happened is on the 24th of July, and here in Utah, for those of you that aren't in Utah, we have a celebration when the pioneers came. And this little family decided that what they wanted to do is they wanted to go float the river. And so Dad went and got some tubes, and he got 4 tubes because the 2 daughters didn't want to go, but the 2 boys did want to go. So he went and tied 2 tubes together, and they had a length of rope that was probably 4 or 5 feet apart. And the dad had a rope with one son tied to him, and the mother had a rope with one son tied to her. And they started floating down the river and doing their thing, and it was fun and it was exciting. The mother and the one son got ahead probably 200-300 yards. The other son, the little 8-year-old boy, and his dad was behind them. And as they come around a curve in the river, there was this great big tree that was in the river. And the father couldn't paddle his way out quick enough, and bam, right into the tree. And as he did so, all of this dirt and everything come down on him, and he was asthmatic. And he couldn't breathe. Thinking that the river wasn't too deep, he stood up and he went down and he went under. The actual, there was probably 10 feet deep in that piece of the river. He came up, went down, came up, went down, according to the young son, and this father drowned. Okay, 5 minutes later, the mother is standing down the river, wondering why her husband and their other little boy isn't there. And when she looks up the river, and around the corner comes this little 8-year-old boy with his hand on his father's shirt. He had a t-shirt on, dragging his father face down in the water. Okay? She runs over, she flips him over, she pulls him over where she can begin CPR, and she started doing CPR. She sent her little 11-year-old son and her 8-year-old son to the nearest house that they could find and to get help. It just so happened it was my brother's house. They took off running towards my brother's house, and they hit a big patch of slough. They had to back up and go around it. By the time they got to my brother's house, they figured it was probably 15, 20 minutes. My brother called 911. A helicopter was dispatched from the Ogden Hospital, and they came. It was 30 minutes later. My brother, his son, this lady was giving CPR the whole time. To make a long story short, though, this little family lost their father. A month and a half later, school starts, and every day these little boys have to ride over the bridge, which is about from here to that building right there where their father died. And every day they look out the window, and every day, guess what they think? Okay, I started doing therapy with them, and the next spring, I got permission from the landowner to go over to the tree that was in the river and cut it down. Kind of cool, huh? So I cut this great big tree down. All of the children wanted walking sticks, and so I took branches off of all the tree, and I cut walking sticks. And then we cut off a smaller little piece of branches, and we placed some flowers on it, and we let the children float them down the river. It was a very, very, very hard day. But for the first time, that little 8-year-old boy was able to share with his family what had happened. And his sisters, who were not there, and his little brother, who was not there, or his brother, you know, was able to share also what happened. And it was a very, very emotional day. Now, for me, then what happened was this. I recognized that my agency was gone because how was I feeling? Sad. And what I said to myself as I was leaving that day is I said, okay, this deserves an hour. So guess what I did? I went on my phone and I punched in an hour, or a half hour, because I cut the time in half. It takes me about 45 minutes to drive from my house to where they lived. And now as I'm coming up and over, the thought occurred to me as my alarm went off, okay, now I've got to stop and I have to do something different. Okay, I pulled up on top of the mountain because then it heads down into my valley.
And I called my sons because my wife and my daughter had gone off someplace and I knew she wasn't home. And I called my sons and I said, do you guys want to go to a movie? Okay, so I thought different thoughts all the way home. 20 minutes after I got home, my next son come in and he picked me up and we went down to the movies. Okay, that's how it works. So what you're doing is you got to catch it, you got to set the timer, and the important thing again is to what? Do something. Do you got to fill your reservoir? God bless you. It's now lunchtime. I'm here. If anybody wants to talk during lunch, or if you want to talk during the time, come grab a hold of me, okay?